This is tape number 4, recorded July 4, 1979, in Seal Beach Leisure World.
September 10, 1932, it was my son's 12th birthday. We started our trip to the West Coast, left Newark, New Jersey, and boarded the old Dixie, a coastline ship that made the route from New York to Dixie many years. It was a jolly trip. Some friend of mine that worked for the North German Lloyd had gotten us a very nice cabin for little money, and the boat had a lot of vacationers on that were happy and jolly. I met Mrs. Lucky with her 12-year-old boy, and we became friends. The boys got to be fast buddies on this trip to New Orleans. They explored the ship, talked to the crew, got acquainted with the captain, and it was just their cup of tea at this time in life. When we landed in New Orleans, it was the hottest day ever, and it's a big city and was a strange city to us. So what to do? First, we looked up the YMCA and found it had a big, nice pool and other games to play, and there were lots of children there. So we left the boys there while we mamas went off looking for a suitable place to stay. On the next day, we took a sightseeing of the city. The boys went to the Y again. They were not interested in sightseeing. We saw all the peculiarities of the city, and the Latin quarters, and their cemeteries where they buried their bodies above ground, and their beautiful bay, and we were told the history and a lot of interesting things about New Orleans. The day when we boarded the train for Los Angeles, we were glad to leave because it was so extremely hot, and we were glad to get out of a big city. Oh, I remember vividly the big, wide, wide main street of New Orleans, and we also visited their biggest department store there, and it was really an interesting thing on the way to Los Angeles, and I was glad my friend thought of that and made it possible for us to go that way. When we landed in Los Angeles, Mrs. Lucky and her boy went on to San Francisco. She was a widow and of quite some means, where I came to find better paying work and a better, nicer way of living. I had friends in Long Island that came a few months before us, and they advised me and coaxed me to come out there, that life was so much better than in New York or New Jersey with this depression that had settled on us and had taken such inroads. It was very hard to make a livelihood, and I had to take my boy out of the school I had him in and also look for jobs all the time. You had to do 4 jobs in the beauty shop for $1. That was shampoo, set the hair, the nails, and the whole works. And you never got any tips because people were so afraid, as an effect of the crash, the real rich people cut down the luxuries, and the beauty shop was one of them. So these friends said, out in Los Angeles, the rents were so extremely cheap, and you didn't have the expense of clothing, heavy clothing in the winter, and all of that, and it appealed to me. Anyway, in those days, there was an atmosphere of moving. Everybody was moving somewhere. Everybody was trying some other state or trying to do a different thing. Well, my friend, him being a very accomplished automobile mechanic and being a brother Mason, was offered a pretty good job in Los Angeles. He also had been a racer, automobile racer, and had quite a name. So things looked up for them, and they told me all that, and I came out here full of hope. And the stock market crash took almost my savings, too. I had some copper stocks left that were pretty good, and I sold them, and with some cash, I started off for Los Angeles and a new world again.
Can I ask what kind of things you invested in before the crash?
Oh, mostly Bitterby paper stock that the Mellon family owned, and different things. I had, you know, you could buy stocks on down payment, too, and I put every penny in there because, I couldn't stand it. Are we on here? I couldn't stand it to let all my friends get rich and I'd stay poor, so I took it out of the savings, building in loans, the savings, and invested in the stock market. I don't remember all of it, but I remember that the copper stocks were the ones that kept their value fairly well. Well, when I got here, my friend put us up in a garage room that was, they had rented a house, a little house out on Main Street near Manchester. And they gave us that room, and we joined their family, thinking it would be only for a week or two. But what I found out the next day when I went down to Los Angeles to a beauty college to get some information on work and so forth, they told me, well, you can't work until you have a state license here, which I didn't need in New York. I was trained by the Marinella School, and they gave us a certificate. And I had never heard that there were states where you had to make a state board. So they said, no, you better come in and take a two-week brush-up course and make your application for the state board, because otherwise you can't work. Well, that was one strike against me. The next day I looked up a friend who was in the county hospital, one of the head nurses, and she knew me from home and told me I should fill out my application, and she would try and put me on as a nurse's helper because I had had this nursing training for children, for babies. I was an infant nurse, so she could have used me. Well, I filled out everything, and when I got near the bottom line, it said, how long are you in Los Angeles? And I said the truth, that I just came a few days ago. Well, she said, that's spoiled. I could never give you a job now. The requirement is that you have been here at least 2 years. Well, I kept looking and looking, and the weeks trickled by, and my money trickled away. And with it, I got more fearful and more despondent. So I thought, well, I'll try the German newspaper, the California Star Zeitung. Maybe some Germans need someone for a housekeeper or a housework. I was more than willing to work anything or at anything that I could find. And the trip from where we stayed into Los Angeles downtown was almost an hour. The transportation seemed terrible to me after New York, and you had to wait. If you did go to work, I thought I can't live out there. I traveled so long. I bought a California stop sign, and I had it under my arm when I took this Main Street car to go hunting for work again. The car was pretty empty, and I don't know why, but I thought about it afterwards. I walked 3/4 of the car back and sat next to a lady in a polka dotted dress and proceeded to open my paper to the ad. And she glanced over and she said, "Oh, you're German." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I'm German too." And she asked me where I came from. I said, "Oh, you wouldn't know the town near Stuttgart," thinking she wouldn't, the name wouldn't mean a thing to her. "Oh," she said, "I come from the neighborhood of Stuttgart too." And here we found out we were from neighboring towns. And she lived with her family out near the county hospital. And I told her then that I was after work, and I thought maybe some German people needed somebody, and I told her about my boy and how badly I wanted to find work. And she said, "You know, in my neighborhood, there's a French lady that had to give up her beauty shop because she got married to a Frenchman, and they started a French delicatessen downtown, and she had to help him. You might go there and see if you can't rent it or buy it from her." Well, I thought by myself, I've got $25 in cash left and nothing else. And I had my doubts whether anything would come out of it. But we went there and met this Mrs. Benson. It was very nice and showed me she had a huge front room with a separate entrance and a big bay window. And she said, "Well, here it is." Well, it had a shampoo tray, and it had a manicure table and a hand dryer, and that was the beauty shop. And she said, "Do you like it?" And I didn't say much and looked around. "It's $10. Well, $10, I didn't know if she meant by the day or by the week or by the month. We had paid $350 rent in my last job in New York, and I didn't know what to do with those $10, and I didn't want to show her my ignorance. So I kept looking. She said, "You know, that includes your hot water and your telephone." She had made a hole in the sliding door where the telephone wire went through, and your light. "Is that too much, $10 a month?" I swallowed, and I thought, gee, if I don't make that, I'll make nothing near a big hospital like that. And I said, "That seems all right." But then I said, "Now the next thing is, you know, I haven't got much money at all, and I have to have money for supplies to get me started and all like that." Well, she said, "I have little of it." And I said, "And I haven't got a permanent waving machine, and that's where the money is these days." And she said, "Well, across the street is a girl that went bankrupt with a beauty shop, and she has a fairly new permanent waving machine, and if you gave her $5 cash and would take over the payments, she'd let you have it." And then Mrs. Schmidt was the lady I met, Schmidt rather, in the streetcar. She said, "I'll vouch for you with the jobbers, with the wholesale houses." And Mrs. Besson said, "Oh, I will too. You get started all right." And they both were behind me, giving me courage. So that evening, I came back a proud owner of a beauty shop, and I had also rented Mrs. Schmidt's third bungalow. She had three bungalows behind her home in front, and she rented it to me for $10, all furnished, and even linen dishes, because they were used to renting to transients in those days. Oh, I was so elated inside because I didn't like the situation anyway, living with my friends. This friend of mine was moored with many men that came in daytime, and her boy, who was a year older than my boy, had a lie to the dad when he came home at night about these affairs. And I felt so uneasy and so bad about that, and I was only too glad to get out of the place and take my boy with me. And that's what I did. They had, Smith had a truck, and they came and got my things, my clothing. I didn't have much else. And I made the move, put my boy in. Changed my boy from the school out there, Manchester School, to this neighborhood, the Griffith School in Hallam Park, I guess it's the section. And we were very glad that we had the place. And that's when I got started to get ready to open that beauty shop. The shop had a license, and the law was that any newcomer could start and work for 6 months or until the next meeting of the state board, which I did. But I moved in there and opened on the 14th of December. Now, this time had passed since our coming from September, and it was high time that I found something to do. And so I got the permanent washing machine from the girl, and I got myself a new uniform, had streamers printed under new management, permanent wave, $1.25, $1.95. The last one I had given was $35, and plus the tips he used to get. Well, I started with high hopes, and here on the 14th of December, it started to rain, and it rained, and it rained, and I sat there for over a week, and getting more despondent all the time. And this Mrs., the lady that owned it, must have felt my despondency. When she came home for lunch every day, she brought me a huge French sandwich, and gave me a pot of tea and a little radio, a little white radio, so I wouldn't get so lonesome. On that radio came such a change, or through that radio and a certain program came such a change to my life that it changed my whole way. I went, it was a program about religious science of mind, given by Dr. Holmes. And that affected me so. What I heard that day, I thought, now that's the kind of religion I could go for. It explained things, our mental affairs and our whole life and how it interrelates and all that. Anyhow, the next Sunday I was out on Hollywood in a big movie where he had his church. I forget now what the movie was called. He was there many years. He was in church buildings. But I stuck with that 2 years, and it encouraged me. And it, my life had more sense to it, more depth and all, not just worry and pushing. And so my beauty shop went along pretty good, except that I went through some hard times. Not when I started to work, and then by the 20th of December, business picked up. Mrs. Kazan had said, "Wait till you get near Christmas. You work day and night. They won't have their hair fixed now, and then again for Christmas." Well, it gave me hope, but it didn't put any money in my pocket. So it came true. I worked till 11, 12 o'clock at night, the 5 days before Christmas, and had already my next month's rent in my pocket. And some of the girls from the hospital, mostly nurses and other help, said, well, we can't pay until we get pain. They wanted it on the cuff, and I had never heard of a thing like that. So I asked the lady of the house. So-and-so came, and oh, she said, that's all right. You must do most of your work that way. But she neglected to tell me that I always had to make a call to the hospital to see if they were permanent employees or if they would just pass us by. And I lost that first month quite a few dollars through that. But besides that, I picked up and got to be quite successful with my permanence and everything. Then I had in former years a tonsil attack now and then, and here I was over 40 years old. I got very sick with my tonsils, and the doctors thought they had to come out, and I had not even put the money for it in the saving yet. I didn't have the chance. So the friends I had by now loaned the advances to me, and they trusted me that they knew I would pay it if I had this tonsil operation, and it was done by someone that cut too deep. So the second attack, where I nearly bled to death at home, the second time I went to the hospital, had to get blood transfusions, and they had me the first night on ice, and I don't think they even thought I would come through, was a bigger expense than the first. And my shop I had taken in that neighborhood with many Italians and Spanish people, and I had taken a girl and operated to keep it going, but she wasn't the right kind. People fell off, and I was out altogether 3-4 weeks. So when I got better and picked up, it was like a new beginning. And also, it showed me while I was sick that I should get a place where I could live and have the beauty shop, because the boy was growing up and he could come home and I would be there and I could, in between, fix meals and do things. So I got together with this Mrs. Schmidt again, and I had met some other people. Oh, yes, I joined the ladies' chorus, the Mozart ladies' chorus. And they had been taken to one of their concerts, and they looked so beautiful in their Mozart gowns, and it was very nice music. And I figured out if I joined and got acquainted, that I could pick up quite some business that way. So that's what I did, and there I made friends. And between all of them and their husbands, there were some builders among them. We found on the entrance of the county hospital, I rented half of a duplex, and it had to be fixed according to stipulations from the board. You couldn't just move in there. You had to have ventilation, and you had to do certain things. So these people helped me and made all that, and I finally got it okay by getting a license for it. Well, I had a living room and a bedroom and chasing to the shop, and so that went on quite a while, and my boy had gotten to goes to junior high, and that was Lincoln High School. Where we had moved then. Well, things went on smoothly there, and I could work and slowly pay my debts off that I had made. And we were there five years, because when we moved out to Highland Park, he was then in high school, my son. And it happened this way. A boy got killed in the Lincoln School, and it was a pretty rough place. And I had met a lady Mrs. Darby and her daughter. The daughter was my son's age. And she said her husband worked in the county hospital, and she said she's not going to stay here because of this school that her girl was in. It was not a healthy place for the children to grow up. And she went out to Highland Park looking for a house for them. And I said, look around if you don't see any suitable store empty. You see, we were still in the after time or coming out of this depression, and everything was very low and very poor. Everybody saved every cent they could. And so she came home that night, and she said she rented the place for them. And there was a nice barber shop around the corner that had a sign out for half the store for a beauty shop, and that I should go. And she stayed the next day and minded my store, and I went out and looked at it and rented it. So then up came this move from the former location at the county hospital to this Highland Park. The name of the street it was on escaped me, but it was a traffic store, and the Margaret, the boys, had just started catty corners from that place. They were in their infancy, too. They were the old lady, the mother of those boys, and the boys run the place. Now they own I don't know how many big Margaret. And there was an ice cream store, Blue Bonnet store, right next to us. So I figured, well, ladies have to go to all these places, and it would be a good location. And it was. It was. We moved out there and started up shop, and everything went well. And I had made the acquaintance of a girl from Germany that was staying with her aunt, and her aunt was dictating her every move in her whole life, and she was very unhappy. She came to my beauty shop for permanence, and the aunt with her, naturally she had to take the cheapest one, but she came back after and said, pay no attention to my aunt, I want the better permanence. She had, it was a fancy undergarment store from Germany, and she made very good wages and had already been saving for the car. And she said when she heard that I was moving, oh, she was so unhappy, and she considered me her confidant and her helper. So she said, why don't you rent a place where you live a little bigger so that I can move out with you, which she did. And that way, it was easier for me to get an extra room. So Marie was with us until she married. I found a husband for her. She never got another wife belonging to the club. I took her along, and that's how she met different people. Anyway, it was pretty pleasant then, and my son graduated from the high school in Highland Park, and I had quite a few teachers and people like that, even from Pasadena after a while, that came steady. So we were not well off. We were still had a scram, and my boy had to pick up every job he could. He babysat for a lady in the block that had a cleaning door, and she'd like to go out, so he stayed there while he did his homework and made 50 cents an evening. And the teachers had given him a job in the library, and he got a little pay for that. And one day he came home and he said, Ma, we're learning today, we started the course on finances, and I found out we're on about the lowest rung of the financial ladder. And then he looked a little while and he said, but we're happy. And that was a consolation to me, at least he felt happy about things. Well, he had to work quite a little, too. He had to start dinner for me and always do the dishes and the cleaning. When he got married later on, he said, I don't care if that wife of mine doesn't know how to cook, but she sure has to know how to wash dishes. Well, life has been pretty good, but because everybody was so poor and I had quite a lot of old ladies, too, that hardly could afford to get their hair washed, but couldn't do it anymore. So I took them to, I helped them out, and they would bring me an egg or a cube of butter, and we exchanged that way. And my more prosperous customer said, well, Mrs. Getz, you couldn't do that. You got to get your money, and someday your boy is sick and he'll leave you, and what will you do? Oh, I said, I don't worry about that. I will always eat. And, but times were really tough, and I gave my boy then the responsibility of collecting our money. He was the cashier and bookkeeper, and he paid the bills. And he did it conscientiously, and he felt good about it. And some Sundays I would say, why don't you go to a show? Oh, he said, I can't. I haven't got second rent yet. But that was good for him. He learned the value of money and appreciated things more. Things went on, and I guess people around there must have felt sorry for me in these times, and with a boy to raise, and my biggest desire was to put him through college and give him an education. So one Christmas, someone came to see me and asked me if they could bring me a box of food for Christmas. Oh, I wanted to go through the floor. I felt so bad having to take food. I said, oh, no, I'm not that poor. Oh, we know your condition. Just don't be ashamed. Take it. Lots of people get that in our times. So sure enough, they brought a box. Such a Christmas I never had. A ham in it. A small turkey in it. A whole lot of canned groceries and fruits and things. Oh, I felt like a king. And I thought to myself how good people are. I always thought that. And that's been true my whole life. If it hadn't been for good, kind people willing to help, lots of times I wouldn't have made it. So that's why I felt whatever I can do for someone needing my services, it's no more than right that I help them. But my clientele worried more about me than I did. And I had then in this beauty shop, I had a Mrs. Berger as a client, and she came all the way from Inglewood because to take more in my business, I learned how to cut wavy hair with the razor, and so it fell into waves, and they never had to do anything about getting waves done. Before marrying Mr. Berger, or even before I ever met him, I used my spare time going to this Mozart Ladies Chorus, and also I loved lectures and things. So my life got filled with interest in political goings on. As I said before, I joined this ladies' chorus, and as such, being a club, we had adjourned the Bund. There was a Bund is a society where all our cultural sports and art clubs had to become members and send their delegates into this Bund. Each club had two representative for our club. I was one, and there were about 30, 40 German-American clubs united in this Bund from all over the United States. As such, because I always was keenly interested in politics or in the goings-on in the country, I took part of the discussion when this situation with Hitler came up. And about that time, we had two young members joining this Bund, calling them representatives of the Friends of the New Germany. And they were very loud and very positively inclined toward Hitler. So we older Germans watched them, because as a majority of Germans, we were here long and were Americanized and loved this country, and we weren't going to have these two sprouts influencing us to take on a new love for Hitler. Well, it happened that a man came over here, a lecturer from Germany. Now, this must have been in 39 or 40, and he lectured all over the United States explaining Hitler not from a favorable standpoint. So these two got ready and had their fellow friends of the New Germany help, and they disrupted about every club that had this man speaking, made it impossible to lecture for anyone. And so we heard about it. They were now doing this and so and so. And they called in the paper. They started a new paper, Freie Presse, they called it, in Los Angeles too. And they called the old paper that Mr. Stitt started years ago, an old cheese paper, they called it. That meant it's good enough to wrap cheese in. And we were pretty provoked. And it got so that they made three or four clubs out of their few friends they had, called each one a different name. For instance, one was the Saturday School for German Language, and so on and so on. So by that, they wanted to gain more voice in the Bund, have more delegates. Well, the time came where our club, our secretary was a man, and he said we should have this man speak in Los Angeles. And I said, I don't think we should do it. Us, you women, why don't one of your big men of choruses and your big organizations have him, and we can support by going? Well, the day came where this man spoke in Los Angeles, and some of our members went. I happened to not be able to go because there was something I had to do that was more important. But at our next Bund meeting, they were trying to drop or liquidate all the clubs that had listened to this man. And we had a discussion and fighting, and there were about 200-300 members there in the Hermannsaal Hall, and I got hotter and hotter under my collar. I wanted to tell him off so badly. And toward the end, when it was near a voting, I asked for the floor. And I got up and told them, if they were so much in love with Hitler, why don't they go back? They don't need to tell us, old Germans that lived in America a lifetime, what we should believe. And above all, they couldn't tell us who we could listen to and who we couldn't. And so for that evening, the question fell under the carpet. They didn't dare to go take it any further that night. And, of course, I told a lot more. Well, as time went on, this Saturday school for German language, first they asked me to become secretary, thinking that if they got me in their camp, I'd keep my mouth shut. And I declined. I said I had no time, and I was no part of it. They didn't need a communist after a while, although I disliked the communists as much as the Hitlerites. And so I declined that. But some of the women sent their young people, their boys and girls, to the Saturday morning school, but it soon could be seen that they were only interested in the boys, and they put uniforms on them and gave them their ties and all and had a march. My friend said to me, why don't you let your John go, Johannes? I said, no. Hitler claimed him already because he was born in Germany and had the citizenship of his father, that I had to send him out there. And I consulted with the immigration authorities, and I had him on my citizenship from the very beginning, so I didn't have to act to it at all, and I didn't. Well, the people that hated these Hitlers and this young friends of the New Germany, they were busy too. And they photographed everyone that went in and out this Bund, which was called the Deutsche House, the German house. And they knew exactly who was taking part on the political things with these young people of the New Germany. And so when it really came to a collapse and the government stopped the Hitlerites here, they knew just who to go after. I had never, most of them then were investigated by the FBI, and those boys that had jobs already, some of the young people, were left out at their work overnight. Now we were at a point before the war, just before Hitler started the war out there. Well, I was one that was never investigated, although I had hoped they would come to me, because we had taken these young firebrands to court and wanted to show how illegal it was for them to have so many seats in the Bund. But somehow the government was in favor of them, and it was thrown out, and we, the old Germans, had to pay, I forget now, $3,000 or $5,000, all the costs for defending our country and keeping them out of the position they were in. So I would have told the FBI a thing or two if they ever came, but I was too well known for opening my mouth against them. So that never happened, and you know, we lived. You, as the war came, just before we went in the war, most of them were put in camp, the active ones, and this perfectly innocent Bund that never was supposed to be anything political got in such bad repute, and a lot of them weren't so guilty at all. They were just followers and maybe weren't citizens yet or something like that. Anyhow, they were put away, and some of them even were sent away. I forget their names now. At the time, I knew them all. And as the war came, all the German clubs stopped existing because nobody came to the meetings and nobody wanted to have any association with somebody that wasn't there of their opinion, and so it just stopped. And now they're going again in the Turnverein and the singing societies and the Beethoven Choir, and all of them are functioning again in peacetime. And those people that were the troublemakers are gone. They're not here anymore. One day a year to have a German day, so-called, in a park. The German Bund got Bund had bought a piece of land out into the Dunkel Hill.